For those of you who don't know me, my name's Margaret Brown, and the reason that I come dressed like this is because I work as a home carer, so I go from house to house helping people, and I work in the morning, and when I finished here, I go straight to work again, so that's why I come in my uniform. So, but it's funny, because as we were singing that, "I will carry you safe to shore," I was thinking of the picture of coming home where after we've died, and I was thinking of the fact that right from the beginning of my life, right to my old age, it says in the Bible, "You are my God. Even to my old age, you are my God." And I deal with a lot of people who are getting on in years, and they're kind of like, they used to be the people who were helping everyone else, and now they're stuck having to be helped by other people, and it's a really hard time. But they can be a blessing even where they are, and I think that's an encouragement to me, because I'm looking at that, and actually even now at home I'm thinking, oh, I'll have to arrange that cupboard properly so if ever I need help they'll know where to find things and things like that. So, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen. So, but even to my old age, even to our old age, is our God. But that's not what I'm preaching on, but there we are. I get two sermons in for the price of one. What I'm wanting to do today, if I can, is to share with you one of the stories from the Bible about a person who was in an absolute desperate situation. And when I mean desperate, I mean you couldn't have got worse. If you can think of anything worse that could have happened to this person, you can tell me afterwards, because I couldn't think of anything worse. So he's absolutely desperate. And on top of that, there is not a single person who is able to help him. It's that desperate. So I wanted us to share together what happened when this person came in contact with Jesus. Some of you might have a guess what might happen to him. But anyway, that was what I wanted to share together. But before we do that, I just wanted to let you know a little bit about where this story is. So it's in the Bible, and it's in the Gospel of Luke. And the Gospels are really the stories about Jesus that have been written, and they're about... there are four Gospels written, and three of the Gospels have this story in. But we're going to look at the story in Luke. And the interesting thing about Luke is, if you go right to the very beginning of Luke's Gospel, he tells you why he writes it. He says, "Most Honourable Theophilus." So he's writing to this Honourable Theophilus. Many people... oh, for those of you who can't follow in your Bible, this is the New Living Translation. Because I've been very good, and I read our newsletter that said that's what we're using in church. Right? Yes. It says, "Many people have written accounts about the events that took place among us. They used as their source material the reports circulating among us from the early disciples and other eyewitnesses of what God has done in fulfillment of his promises. Having carefully investigated all these accounts from the beginning, I have decided to write a careful summary for you to reassure you of the truth of all you were taught." I thought that was wonderful. He wrote this to reassure people that what they were taught was true and real, and they could rely on, and they could rest their lives on what they'd heard. I mean, we have a lot about fake news at the moment, don't we? How do you know what's right or wrong? And I look, every now and again, I look up things on the internet, but you have to be very careful that you're looking in the right place, because otherwise you base your decisions on things that somebody else had just made up. But this was written so that you could know, you could base your life on this kind of thing. So that encouraged me. And I also discovered, when I've been reading through, and I want you to have this bigger picture before I come to the smaller picture, that they wrote these Gospels so that people would begin to understand who Jesus was. this question keeps coming up. You've noticed it in Luke's gospel. Who is this? It says at one place. Who is this who can forgive sins? And just before we get to the story I'm about to read, there's another story. I've got to tell you this one first because it's important. It's a story about how Jesus gets to this person who's in need. He tells all his disciples he's going to go across the lake to the other side. They all get in the boat, and while they're in the boat, Jesus goes to sleep and there's a big storm. Those of you who go to Sunday school probably heard about the storm in the boat. They wake Jesus up and they say, "Don't you care, we're drowning here." And he speaks to the wind and the waves, and he stops them from being a storm. And the disciples who've been following him, these are his special followers, they've been going round with him, they ask each other this question. They're asking, who is this? Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? So that's the bigger question. Who is this Jesus? But I want us to look at the story of what happens to somebody in need when they meet with Jesus. So I'm reading from Luke's Gospel, and it's chapter 8. Oh, look, I haven't written any notes or even where it is. Here we are. Verse 26, and I'm going to read the story and then we'll talk about it. So they arrived in the land of the Gerasenes, across the lake from Galilee. As Jesus was climbing out of the boat, a man who was possessed by demons came out to meet him. Homeless and naked, he had lived in a cemetery for a long time. As soon as he saw Jesus, he shrieked and fell to the ground before him, screaming, "Why are you bothering me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Please, I beg you, don't torture me." For Jesus had already commanded the evil spirit to come out of him. This spirit had often taken control of the man. Even when he was shackled with chains, he simply broke them and rushed out into the wilderness, completely under the demon's power. "What is your name?" Jesus asked. "Legion," he replied, for the man was filled with many demons. The demons kept begging Jesus not to send them into the bottomless pit. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the hillside nearby, and the demons pleaded with him to let them enter into the pigs. Jesus gave them permission. So the demons came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the whole herd plunged down the steep hillside into the lake, where they were drowned. When the herdsmen saw it, they fled to the nearby city and the surrounding countryside, spreading the news as they ran. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, for they wanted to see for themselves what had happened. And they saw the man who had been possessed by demons sitting quietly at Jesus' feet, clothed and sane. And the whole crowd was afraid. Then those who had seen what happened told the others how the demon-possessed man had been healed. And all the people in that region begged Jesus to go away and leave them alone, for a great wave of fear swept over them. So Jesus returned to the boat and left, crossing back to the other side of the lake. But the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go too, But Jesus said, no, go back to your family and tell them all the wonderful things God has done for you. So he went all through the city telling about the great thing Jesus had done for him. I said, can you think of a person in a worse state than him? Now it says that he was demon possessed and that these demons had control of him. Now, I don't kind of want to really concentrate too much on what demons are, or how to think about it or whatever, because you might miss the point of the story if I do. But I do want to say this. The things you watch in horror films are not what it's like, okay? They're just things that people who don't know God make up, really. And that's how they make it up, and that's how they want you to think about things. But what we can see in this case about this person, this man, is that he had no control over what was happening in his life. And I think that is the big thing to try and catch hold of. He's somebody, he can't stop himself. And what is amazing, if you read some of the other people who've told this story, if you read Mark and Matthew, they say that he was beating himself with stones, making himself bleed. And he was so possessed by this spirit that was controlling his life that the torment was shown like that. And he was rushing out and living in the cemetery, it says here, where the graves are. Now, to you and I, reading that, it sounds pretty horrible to have to live amongst the graves. But if a Jewish person heard this story, they wouldn't just think, oh, that's a bit horrible. They would think, that is disgusting. That is horrible. That is horrendous. Because to them, anything to touch anything dead is, oh, I can't describe the horror of what it is, but it makes you unclean and it definitely separates you from God. So the people, the Jews who hear this story will think, well, this man is as far from God as you could possibly get. The place where Jesus comes across, we don't actually know where it is. It says the Gerasenes, but today that could be a number of places. But it looks like it wasn't a Jewish place, really, because they were a place where they kept pigs, which again, I mean, I think most of us know that the Jews don't eat pigs and pigs are dirty creatures kind of thing. So you wouldn't expect that to be in a very Jewish place. So Jesus is coming across to a place, decided to go across the water to this place where the Gerasenes are, to a place which isn't a religious place. It's the opposite of a religious place. It's a place where you could get as far from God as you could possibly imagine. And in that place, there is a man who is even further from the furthest from God that you can imagine. And the people around him, now I don't know if they were trying to be friendly or helpful or what they were doing, but because this man couldn't control himself, they thought, well, we'll try and control him. So they were actually shackling him and chaining him up to try and control him, to try and contain him in some way. And it didn't work. They couldn't even keep him safe from himself, because such was the power that was working in him that he would just break the chains and rush off into where the graves are. And in the cemetery isn't the place where you make friends. That's the place where you're on your own. So he's alone, he's desperate, and it looks bad. In fact, it looks impossible. Even, you can't even be helped to just keep yourself from harming yourself. Your situation is so bad. Now, here's something interesting. There are people who will say to you, or say to me even, that if you're in that kind of situation where you're controlled by these forces like that, then you've got no hope and you can't help yourself. They're kind of half right, but why are they not completely right? I could see Eric jumping up and down. Grace of God, grace of God. I can see him doing it. But why? Why are you not completely? Well, this man, when Jesus arrives on the shore, this man runs to meet him and falls down where Jesus is. Now, as we'll see, as we've read, as we went on with the story, the demon certainly didn't want him to run to Jesus. We can be sure of that. Something in the goodness of God enabled him to respond to his need and to run to this person who was going to help him. I'm saying person in inverted kind of like, yeah, to run to Jesus. And then something else happens, and I love this, because I think this helps us when we're with people who are really, really helpless in a really drastic situation. Strangely enough, when he gets there, he doesn't say, heal me, help me. He says, stop tormenting me. Now, if somebody came to you for help and then said, get away, stop helping me, I think the first thing we do is get away and stop helping them and think, why did you come here, kind of thing. But Jesus sees the need and the heart of this person and answers the prayer of that person that is deeper than the external things that he's saying or that the demon's making him say or this force or whatever it is. Whatever it is, Jesus speaks to the heart and deals with the heart need. And he sends these demons away. He asks their name. I don't know why he asked their name, but I have a kind of suspicion that God knew that in eternity, for eternity of time while we're down here and then up there, we'd be intrigued by this story. And by telling us that name is Legion, we know that it's a numberless amount. You're not just casting out one little evil force. The whole lot's going. All in one go. And again, I don't know why we have this story about them asking to go into the pigs instead of into the abyss. But I do know that it's Jesus who gives them permission. That whatever happens, he's the one who is in control in the midst of this mad situation. He says, okay, you go into the pigs. And what do the pigs do? Whoa! Yes, that's a very good one. They run down and drown in the sea. So they go to the abyss anyway. What fascinates me is, there's this legion of people, of forces inside of this man who must have a total destructive force that's been driving this man for a long time, however long he's been in this situation and living in the graves, trying to destroy him. And all through that time, something has kept him alive and brought him to that moment when he can run and fall down at the feet of the only person who can help him. I think that must be the grace of God. I used to have a good friend when I lived down south, well, good friend, someone I knew quite well in the church, and he had real destructive tendencies. He kept taking overdoses all the time. He'd be all right for a while and then, boom, we'll go down. What fascinated me is he never managed to kill himself. And it wasn't that he was trying to, but he was kept safe for God to deliver and help him. This man, through all those years, when he had no clue at all that he would one day be free, was being protected and guarded and kept by God. Wonderful. And now, here's the weirdest thing. I don't know how he got clothed. I presume somebody gave him some clothes. They don't tell you little details, but somehow once Jesus had cast out these devils, he was clothed. The herdsmen had gone round shouting all these things that had happened. The whole surrounding area comes to see what's been going on. And there's this person that they've never, ever, ever been able to help. And their first reaction, which is probably a sensible reaction, was fear. They were afraid. Having been with this man through so many years, they knew that something extraordinary must have happened to set this person free. Remember this question, who is this one? Who is this Jesus who's done this? Something extraordinary has happened. And then, in their fear, instead of rejoicing that there's a person sitting down there clothed and in their right mind after all those years, instead of rejoicing, they beg Jesus to go away. And here's the incredible thing. That first time when the man was shouting and screaming at Jesus, why are you tormenting me and stuff, Jesus stayed there and dealt with his need. When these people beg him to go away, he gets in the boat and he goes. But he hadn't finished the story, you see. And I love this. Because this man, and I would want to do the same, asked Jesus if he could go with him. Can I come with you? You know, I mean, wouldn't you want to go around with this person who'd healed you and find out what he's doing, what he's saying, what's happening, and you'd feel safe next to him as well. And then he does something. He says to him, he says, no, you go back to where you've come from, to your family, your friends, the people who know you, and tell them what great things God has done for you. And I'll tell you a little secret. When Jesus returned to this area at a later date, they brought to him all their people who were sick and in need at a later date. So I guess Something must have happened in the meantime when that man was going round telling everybody what great things had been done for him. Something must have happened in the hearts of those around. And that prepared the next lot of people to go to Jesus for help. The reason I love this story in another way is because Jesus trusted that person immediately, gave him a testimony, a job to do immediately. He didn't wait to see if his work had been completed in the man. It probably hadn't. He was completely healed, but there's, as those of us who are walking with Jesus know, you're learning new things all the time. But he sent him back, go and tell him. And then the story goes on. I don't really have to tell you, but I'm going to repeat it again. These things were written so that you could rely on what you're basing your life on. And I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt that if you run to Jesus for help, you're going to get it. Now, this man, it's a story of some kind of incredible healing. But it's also a story of a life that has been changed. And I guess there's only one person who can do that, which is Jesus. So that's why the Gospels want you to ask yourself this question and respond to it. Who is this one who has done this? Who is this Jesus? I've got to be honest here. In this story, what happens immediately. The actual point of change and healing. And a life that's committed into the hands of Jesus is changed immediately. But here's the problem. Some of us experience it as a total healing immediately. And some of us find that it takes time, little bits at a time of change, and our lives are turned around in a way. But that point of commitment to Jesus is the point when the change starts. And the certainty is that everyone who commits themselves at that point will be changed to the uttermost, to the best, most perfect salvation you can have. I think that's it. Yes.